Welcome to On the Record, the Kings and Queens of Torture. America has fought wars against nations who have waged torture upon the victims, those that they capture. We've had many stories about torture and the evils of it, and now, amazingly, we have become aware that the Bush administration directed a campaign of brutal, sinister torture upon those we captured. As the memos and other information begins to leak out, as it always does, we find not only the president, but Vice President Dick Cheney and many high-ranking officials, including attorney generals, have encouraged the act of torture. Kevin Zeese, the attorney for the coalition who signed the complaints against the lawyers, is our guest. He'll talk about why he took this to the bar associations of the 12 lawyers and why he's asking for disciplinary action against them and what he actually expects to happen. Kevin, thanks for coming on the air with me. And let's talk a little bit about the entire subject of the U.S. government officially really endorsing techniques that are more horrible than most people understand. There's no way to describe it other than torture. Don't you agree? Welcome to the show, Kevin Zeese.
Thanks for having me on.
Kevin, I see you're a principal in VotersForPeace.us. Before we get into the torture issues, tell us a little bit about this organization.
And the organization is one that's focused on organizing voters who oppose our military-dominated foreign policy, not only to get out of the current wars, but also to prevent future wars of aggression.
Now, you filed these petitions with the bar associations in different states where these lawyers are. And when we talk about this, it's just not you. There's over 200 organizations, I understand, behind this movement.
That's right. And what we did was we filed complaints against state bar associations where they're licensed to practice law, arguing that they use their legal license to facilitate war crimes, and that if you use your legal license to do that kind of thing, you should no longer have a legal license, so we're seeking their disbarment. And we see this as a first step in applying the rule of law to torture, and we'd like to see in the end an investigation and a special prosecutor appointed to hold people accountable if they were involved in torture or facilitating torture.
I guess the first thing I need to find out is, do you think something will come of it? I mean, you file this on May 18th. Here it is, almost July, and I haven't heard anything. Have you? I mean, tell us a little bit more about how this works with the individual bar associations.
That's right. Well, the basic process is that the bar association disciplinary board will do an internal investigation that it will not be made public. And when they, and there'll be no discussion of what goes on in that internal investigation. But once their decision is made, if they decide to go ahead and take disciplinary action against a lawyer, then there's a opportunity for the lawyer to have a public hearing in front of a panel of lawyers and non-lawyers, and there's also an appellate process. So if we are able to proceed on this and get the bar associations to take action, it will also be an opportunity for a public hearing on the question of torture and the role of the Bush-Cheney lawyers in helping to facilitate torture.
So if they do a real thorough investigation, it could cost some money. Who comes up with the money?
Well, the bar association does this on its own. The bar associations are independent private entities, and they are, you know, they are funded. They raise money, you know, from members of the bar to do that. In some states, the courts actually get involved. But then as far as defending themselves, the lawyers whose licenses are being challenged will have to take care of that themselves.
Now, you put a lot of work into this. I notice on our web links to your work, there's 500 pages or more on some of these charges.
That's right. And the 500, each complaint is focus on individually on each of the 12 lawyers that we've taken action against so far. We'll probably be taking action against other lawyers as well. And each complaint also has an appendix that's between 500 and 600 pages long that includes Red Cross reviews of what occurred in U.S. Detention centers and prisons in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo Bay. It also includes Senate Armed Services Committee hearings, includes the various memoranda that were written, that have been published so far by the Department of Justice on torture. So it includes a wide range of stuff, and it's interesting how much information we do have. But my sense is that there is worse information still to be uncovered. And, you know, for example, just this weekend there were reports in Britain about how some of the photos that Obama is refusing to make public show sexual abuse and rape of men and women who were held in custody of the United States.
This whole torture situation and the American public's reaction has been a puzzlement to me and a big disappointment, really. No one seems to be outraged. I mean, the Washington Post, as early as 2005, had stories even naming CIA operatives and what they were doing. Hanging people by pipes, letting them suffocate, and putting people in sleeping bags and zipping them up and stomping on them, letting them suffocate. And you know, this has been out there, and no one's outraged, especially in Congress.
Well, that's what bothers me as well, and that's one reason why we decided to take action. We see Washington, D.C. as unable to act on this. They seem like they're caught in a vice grip of some sort, and it could be because the Congress was briefed 40 times on torture, including many leaders of the Democratic Party, and they're worried about being seen as complicit. It could be because the Attorney General, Eric Holder, when he was in the Clinton administration, approved rendition of U.S. People the U.S. was holding to foreign countries that are engaged in torture. It could be because now President Obama is no longer releasing the thousands of photos that the court ordered released that would have shown that this torture was not just a few bad apples, but a widespread program that was pretty routine in Iraq and Afghanistan. And now we see that he's appointed General McChrystal to be the head of operations in Afghanistan, and he was a commander who had under his command troops at Camp Nemo in Iraq, as well as special operations forces who were involved in torture as well. So there's a lot of conflicts of interest in Washington. Both parties are involved, and so it makes it very hard to get any kind of action. And what we hope that this begins to do is to break down that barrier and do what has to be done, which is, I think, pretty obvious, which is apply the rule of law. Have an independent investigator, an independent prosecutor, investigate the facts, gather the information, and then apply the law to it without the fear of partisanship or, you know, party favoritism or any of those kinds of issues. This is a toxic waste in the body politic of the United States. We need to get this toxicity removed, and one way to do that is by applying the rule of law.
I'm amazed at how many people don't really think about it or endorse that idea. But if we're a nation of laws, then they should be enforced. And these guys are not only not being punished, they still have their jobs.
That's how I see it, too. I mean, this is an issue that is a human rights issue. It's a legal issue. There are laws in the United States and conventions and treaties that we have signed on to that are as powerful as laws. Our Constitution prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. So there's a lot of clear laws with clear definitions of what torture is, and they don't provide any exceptions when you're at war or that civil disturbance is going on or there's a threat of war. There's no exceptions that allow torture, even in those circumstances. And what's important, I think, is for this to be, in addition to the rule of law applied, that there's an open discussion about this, because we're already starting to see, as the facts become known, people are realizing that not only is torture illegal, but it's counterproductive to U.S. security. It's counterproductive to protecting U.S. troops. It provides mostly false information rather than accurate information, as people will say anything when they're being tortured. In fact, General Powell, when he testified before the U.N. prior to the Iraq attack, some of the information from a tortured suspect who just recently died in Libya, who claimed that Iraq was working with al-Qaeda, made it into his testimony. So in many ways, this illegal war in Iraq has its foundations in torture, and that's an example of torture providing false information. Also, It enriches the ability of our enemy to recruit the torture photos, the abuse photos from Abu Ghraib prison. You know, provided a recruiting tool for terrorists, and then also it resulted in deaths of many American soldiers. So torture probably cost the United States more lives and didn't save any.
I don't really follow the Obama logic on this. Well, I mean, I understand what he's saying about releasing the pictures will be inflammatory. But, I mean, all crimes are inflammatory, aren't they? I mean, I think he should release the pictures. I mean, what's your opinion?
Really? Yeah, that's a very good point. I think that would result in outrage. And when I heard that President Obama was going to allow these photos to be released, he was going to follow the decision of the court that required the release, I thought that that would have been a good impetus toward actually resolving this issue. And as far as it being a risk to the troops, the risk to the troops is because everyone knows torture is going on and how bad it was already. The photos will show it's true, but if that's coupled with President Obama appointing a special prosecutor or taking action to hold people accountable, I think that would reduce the negative reaction. People will see this as the past activities of the United States, not the current or future. If he keeps to hide this stuff, he becomes an accessory.
Well, I'm old enough to remember all the horror stories about war and our enemies and how we, thought it was terrible what they were doing to our prisoners. And here we're doing the same thing.
He killed the Japanese for waterboarding.
Mm-hmm.
As part of a criminal case. You know, we prosecuted Japanese officials who were involved in waterboarding troops, and actually they were given a death penalty. So there's no question that waterboarding is torture, and I think everybody knew that. And when you read these legal memos that were written by these Bush-Cheney lawyers, you can see how they were really trying to manipulate and stretch and dodge and weave in an effort to create a false impression that what was going on was legal.
Well, I have a hunch waterboarding is probably one of the better tortures, if you can use that term. I mean, these stories in the Washington Post back there in 2005, they were pretty horrible.
Exactly. And you know, the Human Rights Watch has reported that 98 people died in detention in Afghanistan and Iraq under U.S. custody. General McChrystal's forces that he commanded, two people died in their custody. I think investigations of those deaths will probably show that torture may have been involved. That would be important to know. Because even if that did happen, it went way beyond what was even authorized by the phony legal memoranda that these torture lawyers wrote.
So, Kevin Zeese, let's talk about the Bar Association's reactions. Have you had any? Maybe not.
Associations will probably, some of them will probably try to avoid it because it's a controversial issue and they would prefer not to do it. And so we have to keep the pressure on. And it will be what we have gotten is responses from a lot of lawyers who want to get involved. They're very happy to see this step being taken, and they want to help out. So I expect you'll see more lawyers getting involved in this kind of thing. Lawyers can file complaints themselves if they want to investigate it and put out, put before the Bar Association information of their own. I think we need to show a united front that lawyers want the rule of law. I think that's a pretty reasonable request, and that's our goal, is to try to get that message out.
Well, what I'm getting at is is there any resistance coming out of there? I mean, these people that you name in these complaints have friends in high places, no doubt about it.
No, they won't. I mean, they'll make, as I said, their approach is behind the scenes, quiet investigation. It's kind of like a grand jury. They don't want to, besmirch somebody's name unless they find that they're guilty of something. And so this first phase is quiet behind the scenes. And so we don't expect any response from the Bar Associations on this.
Let's run down the ones that you name in the bar complaints, and let's start with Jay Bybee. And the reason I'm going to start with him, he's a federal appeals judge now, kind of like the fox guarding the hen house.
That's right. He is a court of appeals judge, and he was one of the guys who helped to write the memos that led to torture and, you know, covering, providing kind of legal cover for torture. And I would say, instead of going through each one of these folks, I'll say they fall into basically three categories. One are the people whose names are actually on the memoranda. So if you like Jay Bybee and that we just mentioned and John Yu, then there are their supervisors which goes all the way up to the attorney generals that we've filed against all three of Bush's attorney generals.
Wow, complaints against three attorneys generals. First of all, John Ashcroft, and then Alberto Gonzalez,
and Mukasey. And then the other group of lawyers are kind of in between those two, who helped, like David Addington, who was in the vice president's office.
The name David Addington, Cheney's lawyer, he seems to be the most combative of all of them,
well,
really.
He worked for the vice president, so I guess people take on the image of their boss, I guess, and Cheney has certainly shown himself to be combative. And there are people from various agencies like Douglas Feith from the Department of Defense. These are people who all, helped to push this issue forward. And in fact, Gonzalez, not only was he Attorney General, but he was White House counsel. And so he acknowledges that he wanted to make sure there was legal opinions on this from the Department of Justice. So he helped to push that forward as well.
Alberto must be a real rascal. I mean, there's a lot of evidence against him. For instance, that recent USA Today story, in which the two psychologists who get $1,000 a day based up in Spokane, Washington, they were down there, and they were almost hourly emailing Gonzalez at the White House on his private email saying, can we please torture them again? And I guess Gonzalez said, sure.
And so we have Jay Bybee, Douglas Feith, David Addington, Stephen Bradbury, Michael Chertoff.
Tell the audience about Stephen Bradbury.
Well, he's one of those middle folks who was involved in supervising the memos being written by Bybee and you. And so that's what the, and then people like Timothy Flanagan are similar, Alice Fisher also, Michael Haynes.
Alice Fisher, the torture queen. Now she's had problems anyway. She was up for some high office that Bush nominated her for and had to withdraw. Isn't that right?
And then Gonzalez and Mukasey. So that's the 12 so far. There are other lawyers who we're looking at from the CIA, Department of Defense, and Department of Justice and White House. And, we hope that some of these lawyers who are involved in the torture chain of command will decide it's time to get on the right side of the law and let people know what was really going on. Who was pushing this? How did the policy get formulated? How were these memos designed? And start to get the truth out. Because
have you had any lawyers come forward maybe and tell you a little information about the other lawyers?
No.
Well, how would they get a hold of you if somebody was listening that knew something? I guess you're through your website.
We're pretty out there. VotersForPeace.us is my website. I'm also on the board of Velvet Revolution, which is Velvet Revolution. We have the website thisballtorturelawyers.com. Check out to get more information. And you can also go to VotersForPeace.us and take action on this. Urge a special prosecutor. Urge the one thing we're waiting on as a key next step is Department of Justice. The Office of Professional Responsibility has been working for 5 years on a memo about you and Bybee, and they've been sitting on it. And one of the issues is, should they be disbarred? And so that's a decision that I think could come any day now, which will be very key.
I noticed where you put Michael Chertoff on the list, a director of Homeland Security under Bush at one time. He's kind of a guy with a checkered past, in my opinion.
Well, all these are interesting characters. And, as I said, I hope that some of these people decide that it's time to get on the right side of the law. I mean, it's pretty hard to accept that torture is not a war crime and that what they were doing was not torture. So I think we're, if they step back and review what they did, I hope that they, feel some regret and decide to get on the right side of the law. We need some John Deans will come forward and tell what's really going on.
You filed complaints not only in Washington, D.C., but in California, Texas, New York, Pennsylvania. Any one of these jurisdictions or areas you think will be more likely to react in the way you wish the reaction would be? In other words, is there a place that's a favorite area to get one of these guys?
I don't have any hunch on that. I mean, I think it really is going to take a lot will depend on what the Office of Professional Responsibility does. That will make a gigantic difference. If they come out and say, yes, they should be disbarred, that will be very big. And if they say no, that'll make it, that'll be a hurdle for us to overcome. I think it also takes people getting organized and demanding torture accountability. That people need to recognize the only way to really cleanse ourselves of this toxicity is to apply the rule of law, and it starts with the bar associations. And, you know, the bar associations, I hope, see that legal ethics are already challenged by many. People have doubts about lawyer ethics, and if people who are facilitating war crimes can keep their license, what legal ethics are there?
Legal concept question for you, Kevin Zeese. You attack the lawyers. Lawyers are in charge of giving advice. So when does advice become criminal? You know what I mean? In other words, are you doing something here that lawyers would naturally fear, and then they would, probably stop it in its tracks rather than open up a whole can of worms, so to speak?
Well, that certainly is the argument that the other side makes, and I don't think it's legitimate. I mean, what you have in these memos, and in fact, you know, these memos were later on rejected by the Department of Justice after there was a change in administration and leadership. So these memos are pretty obvious on their face really an effort to manipulate the law and not really present a legal opinion, but instead to present a false legal shield, to make it harder to hold people accountable who were involved with torture.
I mean, you're saying these 12 actually advocated torture.
Well, that's what I see it as. I mean, when I read these memos, it's pretty obvious that they were playing the role of helping torture to happen. They were facilitating torture. So, yes, I would say that's how I'd look at it. And the memos just were so off the wall as far as being consistent with, law that they just don't pass the straight face test.
Another thing I find is interesting is some of the pro-military people's reactions. I'm a veteran. And when I was in the Army, the Geneva Convention was a holy grail.
Yeah. I think that really is a sad thing. And when, you know, Donald Rumsfeld said the Geneva Conventions were a quaint relic of history, that was a pretty bad sign right there. Thankfully, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the Geneva Conventions indeed do apply to people who are allegedly al-Qaeda members and, terrorists or... unlawful combatants, that term that they use. The Geneva Conventions do apply, according to the Supreme Court, so thank goodness that was rejected. And when the Geneva Convention applies, so does the Convention on Torture. And that is very explicit in defining torture, mental injury, physical injury are sufficient to be torture. And there's no exceptions allowed. If a war, threat of war or civil disturbance do not allow for torture to occur.
Kevin, what's happening with the United Nations? It seems like they're impotent on this issue. I guess it's pretty obvious the United States controls most of the UN, even the location. Anything on... they have a torture provision in the United Nations Charter, and I think even an organization that investigates it.
Yeah. I think the UN is a very challenging organization to make operate, with the Security Council holding veto power and the U.S. holding so much of the purse strings on top of veto power. I don't expect the UN to play a role in this, but the Convention on Torture, is something that the U.S. has signed on to and is U.S. law. Under the U.S. Constitution, treaties that we sign on to become the equivalent of law, and that's where we are with the Convention on Torture. So that is one of the laws violated by U.S. torture policy.
I notice in your paperwork, Kevin Zeese, you quote the Eighth Amendment. Won't you tell our audience and me, what is the Eighth Amendment?
The Eighth Amendment is the amendment that forbids cruel and unusual punishment. And, obviously torture would surely be cruel and unusual punishment. It's pretty straight on its face. And so we raise that. There's also the statutes that forbid torture and the statutes that forbid war crimes, which include torture, which are pretty explicit as well.
As for it being a crime in the United States, I don't think you could go in any state to any prison system and not find the prisoners there who have maimed people. I mean, it is a crime.
Yeah. And people get prosecuted for that, So
yeah.
It is something that is, U.S. has a gigantic prison population, and so it's a major problem. The U.S. prison population is a gigantic one. We have one out of four of the world's prisoners, and 25% of the world's prisoners, with 5% of the world's population. And there are sadly stories, you know, consistently about abuse of prisoners. And I don't think it's the rule, but it is too common. And so that's why I think we need this public discussion, so that people understand why it's wrong, why it should be against the law, and why officials should be held accountable who are involved in it.
You know, these direct orders and people saying, well, I was just following orders. Well, common sense would tell you it was wrong.
Exactly.
I think that was a defense that Germany and Japan tried, and it didn't work.
And that's why I opposed Obama's decision not to hold the people who actually committed the torture accountable. Because, again, this is so obvious. And, you know, one reporter talked about General McChrystal's command, and he's the one who's now the head of the Afghanistan military effort. There were people who were involved in torture there who actually went to a colonel and said, look, we're worried that this is illegal. We're worried the Red Cross isn't going to come in and see it. We're worried we're going to be prosecuted, and the colonel said that coming directly from General McChrystal, the Red Cross will not be seeing this, and you'll not be held in violation of any law for what
you're
doing.
So you feel that General McChrystal knew about it and advocated it and maybe ordered it all along, huh? You feel that?
That's what this reporter said, and McChrystal, according to Cy Hirsch, who's that famed reporter who,
yes,
you know, has written so many important articles, he says that McChrystal was not only involved in torture, but that he commanded assassination squads. And so it's very disappointing that President Obama has decided that he should be the person in charge of Afghanistan.
There's something about this issue of torture that I don't understand. Not only the media's reluctance to expose it, by and large, the public kind of a ho-hum attitude about it. And Obama himself, the president, campaigned against torture. Now he basically is, allowing it to go on, or at least go unpunished. I mean, these people still have their jobs. At least he should fire them.
It's disappointing to a lot of people to see President Obama essentially adopting the military's view on this and the military-industrial complex's view on the war. And sadly, we see it on a whole host of issues. I mean, I'm also involved in the healthcare debate, and he's essentially siding with the insurance industry, which is the root cause of the problem. I see it in the recently when he approved the mountaintop removal of over 40 mountains for coal, which is destroying the planet and the major cause of climate change. I mean, so on issue after issue, the Wall Street bailouts is another example. We see Obama behaving like a corporate Democrat who's a supporter of the military-industrial complex. It's very disappointing.
When we talk about politics, Kevin, the point is that we have come so far to the right that Obama is, pictured as a flaming liberal, when he really he's more like an Eisenhower Republican from the 50s.
I think that's a really good position. In fact, in some ways, Eisenhower was actually stronger.
You're right.
especially on the military-industrial complex, for example. I think he's a Wall Street Democrat who supports the military empire.
I think the issue is more than just punishing people here. It's setting a precedent, allowing future administrations to do whatever they want to and get away with it, do it with impunity.
That's exactly what I'm worried about. I'm looking to the future on this, and I don't think if you don't hold people accountable for criminal activity, for war crimes, why won't a future president be involved with war crimes? And, there are already people talking about President Obama being a war criminal. I mean, because of the killing of civilians in Pakistan and Afghanistan, we've had now 2 million people in Pakistan because of the drone in large part that U.S. has been sending, the slow withdrawal from Iraq. So there's lots of criticism of Obama already. And so, we need to start to behave like a law-abiding nation and not a war criminal nation. That's something we need to, and it's hard for Americans to even acknowledge that our leaders are involved in war crimes. That's not something we want to even think about or admit. We have a kind of a view of our country, many people do, that is not consistent with the activity that our country is involved with around the world.
The thing about all of this is that we are using the same techniques as the people we're supposed to be, rebelling against, the people that we think are, you know, dastardly and the scum of the earth. And here we're doing the same thing. I mean, how about the guys that decided to do this? Are they wrong-headed? Or are they just mean?
Yeah, I would say that those kinds of actions actually are counterproductive to our national security. I don't see how.
I mean, you look at it, there's no doubt in my mind that the communists, the Vietnamese, the North Vietnamese, go back to the Nazis and Japan, those people who were torturing thought they were doing a service for their country.
Might be a little bit of each for some of them. I mean, I do think some, get convinced that they're doing the right thing, that they have to be extremely tough. The only thing they respect is, violence, blah, blah, blah. I think it's a wrong-headed view.
We punish them, so why not punish these guys, our guys?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And I think if we don't have a public discussion of this, that wrong-headed view will continue to be too dominant and too powerful. I mean, we'll never convince everybody that it's wrong, but if we have a public discussion about this and people see how torture actually is counterproductive to our interests and even the security of our troops, then we'll continue to make the same mistakes. And so we have to have this out in the open, discussed and resolved, and hold those accountable who made those wrong decisions.
We're talking with Kevin Zeese of the coalition that is trying to take some bar action against the torture lawyers. Did you sign the complaints yourself?
Personally? I did. It makes me nervous, I must say.
Do you have to be a member of the bar of each place that you've complained?
No, you don't.
Okay.
Well, we decide that having a lawyer do it would be the better way to go. And so I signed all the complaints, and we filed in D.C. and then three other states. And our hope is that the bar associations will take these seriously and begin to apply the rule of law.
Kevin, how do your fellow lawyers feel about this? They're with you or against you?
I think there's a range of views, of course, among lawyers. And, some lawyers, recognize that this is clearly illegal and the rule of law should be applied. Others, I think, are so involved in their own lives that they don't even think about it. And there are others who say, well, hey, we're in a war on terror, anything goes. And so it's a mix of views, but I think compared to the general public, there are more who feel that the rule of law should be applied and people should be held accountable for the actions. It's not looking back stuff that Obama talks about. If I commit a murder, a couple of years ago, I still get held accountable.
Kevin, we only have a couple of minutes left. First of all, I want to bring up the statute of limitations issue. I mean, murder is involved in some of these cases. I guess you could say attempted murder. I don't know if that has a statute of limitation or not. But murder certainly doesn't.
98 people died in custody of the U.S. Command in Afghanistan and Iraq, according to Human Rights Watch.
To wrap this up, what would you suggest our listeners do, and what else would you like to say?
Well, I think there are a couple of things I'd urge people to do. My group is votersforpeace.us. If you go to that page, you'll see a big icon about disbarring the torture lawyers. If you click on that, you'll be able to write letters to your members of Congress, to the Attorney General, and to the President about these issues, and we have several steps we want to pursue. You can also go to disbartorturelawyers.com and sign on as one of the people who oppose this. We want to have as many people as possible sign on to the supporting our efforts to hold people accountable. And so I think that you should do all that, and then as you do that kind of stuff, I hope people will forward that information at votersforpeace.us and disbartorturelawyers.com to people they know, because we really want to build a better country, and it's only going to happen if the people stand up and demand it. And so please, I urge people to get educated, get involved, get organized, and take action, because that's what's going to take to get this country on the right course.
I guess the question is, how long will it take the bar associations to act even? May take a long time.
They can take anywhere. There's no deadline, so they can take months. They can take more than a year. We'll see how long it takes.
Then again, these guys are powerful people. They may be able to stop it in its tracks.
Well, I think they might have a lot of power, and that's why we have to be organized ourselves. We need to have a lot of people come forward and step up the pressure on this.
Kevin Zeese, thanks for coming on. Thanks for signing the complaints. I get a lot of criticism from some of the audience for doing these kind of shows, but it's a very personal thing to me.
Well, we hope that we can find a way in this democracy to get the Bar Association, the courts,
and the Department of Justice to uphold the rule of law. And I think if we do that, the United States will get on the right track again. And if we don't do that, we have to organize to make it happen.
Thank you, Kevin. You're making an effort. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.